I don't know who's funny. Are these guys back in production or what? They just did this. We're going to start in 3, 2. Oops, wait a minute. It's like, oh. All right. So now we're going to get started with the scripting language and taking people through the basics that they need to know, the scripting language in PowerShell.
Yep. But, okay, so we just told everybody, hey, go to PowerShell.org, crash that server, and when it comes back up, downline load the scripts because you're going to use these scripts. And we talked about the execution policy and said best practices remote signed. So let's put those pieces together. You just downloaded a bunch of scripts and your execution policy is remote signed. And so you've gotten a demonstration of how it works, which is to say you're not allowed to run any of those scripts.
We intended that.
Yes. Make a point. And thank you for pointing it out in the chat room. Now, there's two things you can do. First is you can change your execution policy. You can change it to unrestricted.
For just this, though.
For just this. Bad idea. Here's a better idea. So let's go. Let me show you how this works. So here on ISC, I can say II dot. II is short for invoke item, and dot brings it up. And so what you can do is you can right-click things, go to properties, and there's something I've already fixed this. So, sorry.
Yeah, it's right there.
It'll show you if it was blocked.
Yep.
And then you can unblock it. However, I already fixed this. There is a version of a new commandlet called unblock file. And so what you do is, I'll CD here. You see I'm in jumpstart. I put everything there. And what you can do is you can say unblock file */*, and I do verbose, and what it does is it unblocks all those files.
You know,
okay, so here's the model for unblock. Unblock is for when you have looked at the file, you brought it downloaded it from somewhere, and you trust it now. And so what you do then is to say, I trust it, I unblock it. And we're telling you, by the way, is it safe?
Well,
Marathon Man, is it safe?
Yeah, it's safe. I didn't put anything nasty in there, guys.
Yeah, so we're telling you. Jason is telling you.
Yeah, that makes me
clear about that. That there's nothing evil in those files. I'm not telling you that, Jason is. And that it's safe to unblock. So go ahead and unblock those files, and then we'll use them for today's sessions.
And by the way, thanks for showing me the unblock, because I didn't even know that existed.
See, I'm telling you, it's this exploration and community. Right? You try something and other people say, well, why didn't you do it this way?
Yeah, I'd love that. So, boys and girls, here we go. We're going to start off with talking about variables, how you make variables, how you can use variables, some fun tricks with quotation marks and how they work with variables. And also, if you watched the first episode, this might be a little bit of a review, but we want to talk about object members and using them with variables. In other words, everything's an object in PowerShell, and we're going to send it to get member, and there's all kinds of interesting things that we can do both with methods and properties when we have them in variables. Also, I want to review how to utilize parentheses in PowerShell to call up some files, like if you have a server list and a text file or a CSV or something like that is one of the things that people were asking us about in the last episode. So we'll show you some more on that. Then we're going to dive into what you're going to be using quite a bit, some logical constructs, which means if statements, and how they work, and then some looping constructs, which are the loops that we can use in PowerShell. I'm going to show you several different loops, but there's really one or two that we're going to be focused on today that are the most useful ones that we'll be using throughout this. So let's get started with variables. Now, I've got all this on the slide for you, but I'm going to open up my scripting pane here. And if you've noticed, guys, let me just show you. This is module 2. I put in a startup script that will just launch the ISE and put all of the demo scripts in this module already as tabs right across the top in the ISE. So I'm going to be using these. I'm going to try to minimize my hand typing because, as you can tell, I can't type very well. First of all, variables. Place in memory to store stuff. Now, variables in PowerShell can store anything. I mean, they can store strings, integers, they can store objects.
Objects.
And we don't really have to think about that as administrators. We just do it and it just happens. And it's very fascinating about variables that we don't have to think about it most of the time when we're interactive at the console. But now, when we start working with variables, we're probably going to want to start thinking about what type of data we want in those variables and that kind of thing. So Guys, let's take a look at a couple of examples here. First of all, one of my favorite examples, setting a value to a variable. And guys, one of the neat things about the ISE is if I want this line to execute, I just press F8 and you'll see it in the screen down here. So that line executed. I want to show you, this is one of Jeffrey's favorites. He loved to show this one in the last one. I want you to notice the use of the squigglies. You can put spaces in your variables. You're crazy, but you can do it. And I'll show you that. I'll execute this one as well by pressing F8. When you want to get the output of a variable, there's a couple ways you can do it. You guys, if you've worked at the console, you know you can just type the variable and you see there's the value that's in there. I'm going to hand type this down here though. I want you to see what IntelliSense does with this guy for me, because here's the problem you run into. You put a space in there and you kind of forget that you need squigglies around it. Look at the IntelliSense. See how it found my space var? Well, when I hit tab, it put the squigglies in for me. So if you do have to have a space in your var, which you shouldn't, at least IntelliSense will help you use it and you can get the value out of it.
Now, by the way, the key there was he did $ and then M and did IntelliSense. If you did $ squiggly, it's not going to work.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I would have had to hand type it all out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You're on your own.
I'm on my own. Now, guys, this is how you can work with variables in the console interactively. But when we start to script, we want to be a little bit more structured about how we do things. So the correct way, at least for now, to output a variable is to use the commandlet write output. Now, we're going to have several different versions of write where we can do warnings and all kinds of things. But write output my var says, take this var and put it out to whatever it is I want it to go out to. Later, you'll see that this could be the pipeline or something like that. By default, it's going to go out to the host or to the screen for us. Also in scripting, we want to start to be specific about our variables. And we want to start to tell our variables what kind of data they're going to hold. Rather than just letting the variable figure it out, we're going to start to want to control this. First of all, it's much better script documentation. In other words, you have specified exactly what you want. Take a look at the example here I have in line 12. Notice I'm going to say string, my name is Jason, and I'm going to run that. And so you can imagine that, well, we'll just type it out down here, $ my name. It's got my name in it because this is string data, and I have strongly typed what that variable is allowed to hold. Take a look at this, though, line 13. Here I'm saying that the variable needs to hold an integer. And look at the kind of data that I'm giving it. Ooh, let's see what happens when I try to run this. Uh-oh, I get an error message. It's telling me that I'm trying to input the wrong data type into this var. This is why you want to start to do this in your scripts, because it can get confusing sometimes what kind of data is going in.
Yeah, this is a benefit of types. Types allow allows the system to do work for you, right? And it brings in a whole set of features. So let me just draw one key distinction, and that is where you use the type. So here I'll show you, I'll say $x equals integer 1. Okay, and so we'll execute that. And indeed, $x is 1. And I can see $x equals test. $x. Okay, so notice when I put the type, that's bracket, a name, bracket, when I put that on the right side, that is what we call casting the value to that type. But we didn't apply it, we applied it to the value and not to the variable. And that's why we were able to reuse this and set it to a string. Okay, so now imagine I do this. Imagine I say integer $x equals 1. Okay, same thing happened, but now it gives an error. So that's the distinction. If you want the variable at this point in time to have an integer, you do it this way. If you want to say this variable can only contain integers, you do it this way.
And what this is let me give you another example of this as well. Here's, you're going to see this a lot today. A lot of times we're going to want to be able to do things like store a computer name or something into a variable so that we can use it later on. Here I'm using the commandlet, oops, I don't want to move it, which I just screwed it all up. Control Z.
Control Z is your friend.
Control Z is my friend.
Control Z says undo something.
Read-host, this will prompt you to enter in a computer name, and I want to store that in here. Well, this is always going to need to be a string, so I'm going to make it a string. I don't want this stored as an integer. And let me just go ahead and run this as an example, and you'll see what it does here. See, it prompts me for my computer name. I'll put in a computer name called DC, and then we can, of course, print it back out. Now, I know that working with variables doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but making sure that you have cast them correctly, that you've typed them correctly, is going to become very important to us as we start working with parameters. You're going to see this as we start to look at how the syntax gets built and how the parameters get built. So it's good practice to start doing this now with your vars, which is not what you're accustomed to doing when you're interactively working in the shell, because the shell just handles it all for you.
Yeah, let me show one more point about the benefit of types and how they do work for you. So here I'm going to show you, I set a $D equal to some date, right? So this is Christmas, right? My daughter's fascinated with Christmas. She always asks me about Christmas, right?
We're all fascinated with Christmas.
$D, you know, there's the string, okay? So at this point, it's a string. And if I say $D dot, you'll see I can do string things to it, right? Copy, things like normalize, pad left, pad right. So it's pretty useful stuff, right? I don't know if you've seen that. Pad left, pad right. Let's see. Pad left. 100.
Oh, cool.
There you go.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So things like that. Okay, however, notice none of those things were anything to do with the date.
Yeah.
So what I can do here is I can say, hey, let's do it this way. I'll say, hey, this is a date time. Okay, and now when I say $D dot, look at this.
Oh, there's all the date stuff.
I have a whole set of functions. Okay,
right.
So this is the power of types. I can say, well, hey, give me the day. Oh, the 25th. Wait, day, what was that? Day of the week. So what day is Christmas going to be this year? I have no idea. Well, let's ask PowerShell. It's going to be on a Wednesday.
Oh.
Party.
Oh,
then you
really?
Say, okay, well, wait a second. Day dot, you know, I always like to say that my in-laws live in the UK. So if we wanted to send them gifts, you want to do that like a couple weeks before. So what you can do is you can add days. And if you use a negative number, so let's say, 7 days times, 6 weeks, a negative number, that tells you I have to ship them Wednesday, November the 13th, to get there. So types are your friend. Types allow you to do really crazy powerful stuff. Like if you just had a string and you tried to do that in C# or in Python or Ruby or whatever, it's like, best of luck, my friend. You're in for some heavy lifting.
So, and let me just show you guys, since you have the slides, I just want to point out in the slides that I've listed some of the types for you over here. We're going to be spending most of our times with int and string and date time, that kind of stuff. But I did list them all for you in the slides. And also as a reminder, you do have commandlets to work with variables. We're just not going to use them that often. In our scripting, we're going to be writing it all out. And as you'll see, it's pretty straightforward the way that we're doing it.
So. And just be clear, this type, this list here, is a small representative sample.
Small, yes.
Turns out you have the full .NET access. You can do anything with .NET.
And that's one of the interesting things is that people ask me all the time, and correct me if I'm sure you will correct me if I'm wrong, is that there's no help file that lists the types, right?
Correct.
Okay, good. Because it's all of these types come from .NET, so this is something you could find on MSDN.
MSDN, yep.
Is a great example of where you can find all the different types that you can have and explanations of what they are.
Yep.
So, awesome. Okay, back to the... Did I close it? Oh, goody, I didn't.
By the way, can we do a short little trip? Can I just say, types are, like, variables, like, these look like your regular old variables. Like, anybody who's done any kind of programming or any scripting, they're variables, right? And you think you know what they are, but trust me, they aren't. This is PowerShell, okay? So it's different, right? These are PowerShell. So, concretely, let me show you something here. So imagine I say, well, I'm going to have some variable. By the way, I'm kind of foreshadowing something you're going to see when we get into scripting. In scripting, you can define parameters, and then you can put certain what we call validation attributes,
yeah.
Right? Which is to say, hey, this value, it's a string, but it can only contain these values. Okay. So imagine I say, I am here and I say, I'm going to have some string, $x equals A. Okay, I run that, happiness $x is A, and if I wanted to say $x equals test, yeah, that works too. Now it's $x is equal to test. Okay, but what I can do here is I can go and I can use one of the things you're gonna see a lot of later in the day called a validation string. And what I can say is I can say validate set, and I can say, hey, this thing can only contain values A, B, or C.
This is awesome.
Okay, so now I run this, it works, $x is that, like $x equals B, happy, that's an X. But then if I say $x equals test, error. Okay, so this is PowerShell, my friends. So it's very, very powerful. So the point is, just because something looks familiar doesn't mean you've explored it. So you want to explore this. There's a very rich set of things. Now again, that's just kind of a foreshadow. You're going to see more of it later on in the day. But
I think that's an important demonstration that it's not just what, it's not your daddy's programming language. They put a lot of stuff in here to make your life easier and better. And so the validation is actually awesomely cool. You're going to see us use it with parameters, but as you just showed, there's a lot of useful ways you can use it anywhere in your script. So totally awesome. And guys, I'm going to go to this fun with quotes, which is example number two, and I want to show you this. And you saw Jeffrey just now, he was putting values in quotes and sometimes double quotes and sometimes single quotes. Let's talk about this a little bit. The quotes do matter in PowerShell, and something kind of happens depending upon your quotes. Take a look at line four here. I've got a variable, and I'm just going to set it to PowerShell. So I'm going to run this. Not a big deal. Take a look at my first line here. Notice that it's between double quotes, and it says, well, this is the variable $i and $i rocks. Well, here's the interesting thing. Between double quotes, the variables get resolved, right?
Yes.
And this is actually kind of cool. So I'm going to run this and take a look at what my screen says. This is the variable PowerShell and PowerShell rocks. Well, PowerShell does rock, but it resolved this one too. Well, when you use single quotes, the variables don't get resolved. Oh, so single quotes, the variables won't get resolved. So let's try this one and see what it prints to the screen. Ah, this is the variable $i and, well, $i rocks. Well, that's not exactly what I want. But first of all, the important distinction. When you put a variable between double quotes, you're turning on a special feature that PowerShell then resolves it. When you use single quotes, PowerShell ignores that and doesn't turn on that special feature. So you will see us use very distinctly sometimes single quotes when we don't expect a variable there, or we don't want the variable resolved, and double quotes when we do. And you'll see that throughout today. Now, in this case, let me show you how to solve this particular problem, because you can see my problem is that I want it to say, this is the variable $i and PowerShell rocks. Well, there's an interesting little character here. Notice you have to put it in double quotes because I want a variable to resolve. And let me take it away and add it back in. To the left of your number one key is a backtick. That's an escape character. And watch what happens when I have escaped that. Now PowerShell will ink. This is the variable $i and PowerShell rocks. So the escape character lets me control that inside of the double quotes. Like I said, we're going to be using lots of quotes today, and everybody keeps asking, what's the difference? Well, that's what the difference is, and it's an important difference when we start to script. An example is right here. I'm going to set a computer name of client, and then I'd like to use get service, name bits, and for computer name, I want to use that variable. Notice I put it inside of double quotes because I want that variable to get resolved when this executes. Now, I'm going to select this so you can see this, and it works. Now, I want you to notice, hey, Jeffrey, how come I can take out the quotes and it still works?
I was going to say, why are you putting the quotes?
Well, I know, because and this is the thing. You're going to see us use quotes a lot and with variables, but sometimes you see us use commandlets, and we've got a variable there, but we don't put quotes there usually.
Yeah, so, okay, ready for the...
Oh, God, here we go.
The real answer.
Yeah.
The real answer, back to the trustworthy computing memo. Okay, trustworthy computing memo, we did design this for security by default. And there's a classic thing called a SQL injection attack. SQL injection attack says, I get some input from the user, and I place it here, and I run the SQL query. And what happens is that the SQL injection attack says, I get the value. You might say, select star from table where name equals... grab this value, put it in here, right? And then you say Jeffrey Snover, and it says, get you that. But instead of putting Jeffrey Snover, what they do is they'll say, Jeffrey Snover, statement terminator, and then something else, like a completely different table, like go gather this information. Credit cards or delete the database or something. And because you take that string and you just concatenate it and then execute it, all sorts of bad things happen. I cannot tell you how expensive SQL injection attacks have been. Well, PowerShell has no such thing. Our parser was designed specifically to address these SQL injection type attacks, and so it's a completely safe parser. And so what you're doing is you're not concatenating a bunch of strings together. When you give an object, that object's going directly to that parameter.
And so we don't have to put the quotes because it knows how to handle it.
And particularly because you're not creating, the command line isn't a big string.
Isn't one big string,
yep.
Absolutely. So guys, you'll see this a couple of different ways. Sometimes you'll see people using the quotes in their scripts, but most of the time with commandlets, when you're putting in values, you won't see it. You'll see me not use it a lot today as well. But at least now you know the difference between the two different types.
But wait, so let me show them a trick, because
yeah.
I don't think you showed this later. Okay, so show them my screen. So imagine this. Okay, so imagine I'm going to get process. So let's show you what that gives you. So if I get process, right? And so then what I'm going to want to do is I'm going to want to say, hey, I want to get the process ID equals and then show the value, right? I want to show this 828.
Yeah.
Okay? So I assign it to a variable, yeah? And then I just go ahead and execute this. And notice that didn't quite work out the way I wanted.
It didn't work out so well, yeah.
So look here, I got system diagnostics process LSASS.ID. Okay, so by the way, so this is interesting, right? So you might have guessed this, and if you did, you're right. $p.toString. Okay, so that is that. So what's happening is when you do this, it's evolving that to a string. It's evaluating that, and then it's concatenating .id. So that's clearly what you don't want to do. Right? So at this point, you just throw it away and pick up Python.
It's all broke.
C#.
Yeah, because it's broke and it doesn't work.
Didn't do that.
Turns
out this guy Bruce is actually a pretty smart
guy. Pretty smart guy.
So here's the deal.
And this is important, guys. This is actually really cool.
I'm saying it, aren't I?
Oh, yeah.
Confused me there for a second.
Yeah, really.
So here's the deal. When you do the string expansion, one of the things you can do is you just put things in parentheses, okay? So you say $parentheses, and what happens is we will execute anything and we'll execute it and we'll run it. So here what we're going to execute is $PID. Yes. Okay, so we do this. Oh, what did I do wrong?
PID.
Sorry. What did I do? Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Is it ID?
$P.ID.
Oh, yeah.
There.
Oh, there it goes. Yeah.
Okay. So, voila. Now, notice I said anything you want is in here, right? So you can run anything. Okay, so concretely I said read host minus prompt, what should I give them? Okay, so again, what we do when we expand the string is we see this $parentheses, we execute anything anything. can be a simple expression. It can be a multi-line script. It can be a 10-page script. Anything you want. We execute it, and we take the value, and we plug it in here. So when we run this, it's asking me, what value should I give them? Give them 8888888. And it just takes that value and expresses it. So that's one of the key things you want to do about learn about it. By the way, and if I had done single quotes, of course it would say does no right. no expression evaluation.
Now that's actually that dollar sign parentheses and then I'll do whatever you want is so very important because it's confusing sometimes when you're putting things into strings and you're getting back. You know, the type name and all that stuff. That has a particular name. It's called a sub-expression, right?
Exactly.
Like a periscope. That's my sub-expression joke. Is up.
It's gonna be a long day.
Yep. All right. So
can we party? Okay. So here's the thing. You might say, oh, why am I ever gonna do with that stuff? Like this distinction. Like when am I ever gonna want to have a dollar sign in stuff? Like that makes no sense. Well, let me show you a cool thing. So first off. We showed you before this notion of snippets, okay? So let's hear. So snippets, okay? Cool stuff, okay? Now, did you realize, I now show you commands, and I say snip, oh, I already did this, snip. Oh, you already cleaned that out. Pay no attention to this. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Okay, so notice you can get snippets, you can import snippets, and you can create new snippets. You can create new snippets, okay? So here is the description. I can say underbar my var test, right? And the title, I don't know what the title is, so I'm going to test title. Author, of course, Jeffrey. And text. Now, this is the text that you're going to replace. And obviously, you don't want to type that all here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, I don't know if you knew this, in show command, I'm going to say $script. Okay, and before I run it, now I have to put a script into $script. And my script is going to be this whole thing here. I'm going to put the whole thing. Now, the problem is I've got all these dollar signs in here, and I've got to preserve it exactly as is. So, if you haven't seen this, there's something called here strings.
Here strings. Here strings are awesome.
So, here string is
it's WYSIWYG.
At, and then quote. Okay, notice everything is there. Here string is a multi-line string. Okay, so it can contain carriage returns. And if I do the quote, it's going to take all those dollar signs and expand them. And so I don't do that. I use a single quote. I come down here to the end. Do it again. Sorry. That wrong. What am I doing?
Oh.
Am I doing this wrong?
Quote at? There we go.
Given enough time and resources. So now that is a string. Okay, notice it's exactly what's up there, because that's the whole point. And now what I do is I say, okay, I'm gonna assign that to a variable. Remember I mentioned the first thing, PowerShell is a powerful language because I'm deeply flawed? Script equals. So now I run this, and so now I have this $script. And so that's here. And so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to run new ISE scriptlet. I give it a description. Oh, that's the description. I want that. That's its name. That's its title. This is a test which shows... stuff. Anyway, so we run it here. Okay, great. So now I've created a new snippet. I come here and I hit Control J and somewhere here.
Oh, there it is.
There it is. There's my commandlet. And when I type it in, voila, I get exactly what I got before.
So you can make your own snippets.
And when you create your own snippets, you want to have exactly, you're going to have dollar signs and all this funky stuff.
Yeah.
And you don't want any of that stuff expanded, otherwise it's going to come out all wonky. So what you do is you use a here string, which is a multi-line comment, and you use the single quotes so you don't expand any of it. We're tying it all together, baby.
So it ties together. So
back to that tool making.
Back to that whole tool making thing.
Learn the concepts, put the concepts together, party.
Now, PowerShell... does everything as objects. And so another concept we have to add in here before we start making scripts is take a look at my screen. I'm looking at the third example here is, if you joined us in the last presentation, this will look familiar. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put an object into a variable. And you can see I'm just going to do get service name bits. And the interesting thing that happens is I'm going to pipe this to get member. Now, pipe GM is the short way of saying I'm going to pipe it to get member. So we can take a look at what's in there. Well, what's in there is the actual service object. And we can go up here and look at the name. It's a service controller object. Whoops, for bits. And look at all the methods and the properties. Well, this is kind of cool because now that I have that object stored in that variable, I can now call or work with those properties and those methods. One of those is down here called status. It will give me the status of the service. So look what I'm doing. $service.status. See, you can see that it stopped. And if I go back up here, you'll see that there's a method, which is something that the object can do, called, where is it? Start. Well, since the service is currently stopped, let me change this to execute the method as start. And guys, if this is really unfamiliar, we did this in the first episode. This is kind of a reminder. And as you can see, when I execute this, it's actually going to start the service. Notice here, see how Jeffrey showed us the sub expression up Periscope? By the way, I got that from Ed Wilson, so blame him. Up Periscope. Look, I've got a message that I want to print out to screen. Service name is, if I didn't put it inside of the sub expression that Jeffrey showed us, this would come out with a weird name, you know, dot service controller, and just, it's not what you want to see. So inside the sub expression, I'm saying, show me $service.name, and I'm using another method to upper to make it all uppercase. So I just wanted you to be able to see this. I'm going to put it in there and I'll print the message out. Ta-da! Service name is bits. So again, putting objects into variables, you can then pipe it to GM to see what methods and properties are available. You can execute and look at those methods and properties. And you can also then start using them in messages. And again, that sub-expression becomes very important, that $ parenthetical. Now, working with multiple objects, variables are very variable. Come on, that was, okay, so it wasn't. Even the guys in back are going, please. So just look at this. Instead of doing a single object, I'm going to execute and do, notice that I'm using get service. That's going to be multiple objects. Well, the beautiful thing about this is, and I'm going to do this down here in the lower pane, is that variables are arrays. And if I want the first element in that array, and again, we talked about this in the first episode, I can put in the element number and we start counting from zero. And so the very first service in this list, I can also go through and look, because we're going to use this quite a bit. I want that first service, but I want to see its status. So I'm going to dot status. And notice the ISE is helping me. And that'll get the status of the service. So you can call individual objects in a collection and then check their properties and execute their methods as well. And so then you can dash one, get you the last one. And here's a couple more examples that I just put in here for you to be able to play with, of using a sub expression with a particular object in a collection where I'm doing dash display name or changing the name to upper. So you can see that working with variables, especially a collection of variables, is very important to us for our scripting. One last thing before we get into the actual script language itself. Well, this is the script language, but parentheses. Everybody's been asking about these parentheses. How can I, you know, get, you know, a list of computers out of a text, or and how do I work with that? So I wanted to make sure
before
you guys...
Before you do that, can I show them something?
Sure.
Okay. So notice we're going to have fun with arrays, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Do we talk about that later?
Well, you go ahead and talk about
okay.
it.
Okay. So you notice he did this. We did, you know, service equals this, and you have $services, and you see them all. Okay, happy. But are you aware of the range operator?
The range operator. Okay. Great
so
example.
The range operator is dot dot. So 1.3.4. Okay, it generates things, right? So you can say, you know, 10.15. Okay, now check this out. Services, or sorry, dollar sign services, one dot dot five.
I like that. I like that a lot. That is awesome.
So you think that's cool?
Yeah.
You think that's cool?
Well, yeah, I think that's totally cool.
Five dot dot one. Backwards.
Oh, so it did backwards. That's awesome. That's awesome.
And if you want to, there's minus one, right? So you can go, you know, one, let's see, I think there's dot count. Yeah. Anyway, so you can, you, minus one goes to the end of the array.
Goes to the end of the array.
Yeah.
So we're going to be working a lot with these arrays and the looping functions that'll, the looping constructs that'll let us work with them. Let's take a look at these parentheses here real quick, and I'm just going to give you a couple of examples here. I'm just going to make a couple of text files real quick. I'm going to make a text file, and I'm going to make a CSV so that you can see how I'm going to use these parentheses. And all I'm doing is putting in some computer names and sending them out file. The first one will just make a text file of two computer names for me. Da-da-da-da. And now take a look at the next one. Now, you guys know that CSVs, they have a column header separated by commas. So I want to put in computer name, comma, IP address. So I'm going to do that, and that'll create the file, computers.csv. But I want to add some things to it. So I've got DC and its IP address, and I'll just append it. And I'm going to add client to it. Now, here's the cool part. Yes, I could call these up in Notepad, and you could see them real quick, you know. So if I, whoops, not that, that's not what I wanted to do. So I could go out here and show you that they exist, DIR. So you see computers text and computer CSV, and I can Notepad on the computers text. Whoops, wrong one. There we go. And you can see there it is, nice little text file. And PowerShell, we have an import CSV, and I'm going to import that CSV so you can see that it's well formed. It's the way it's supposed to be. So notice I got my columns and my headers. So whatever file type you have, you can now use that with your commandlets. And look at the examples here that I have for you on the using it with the commandlets. Get service computer name. See the parentheses? The parentheses mean do whatever inside there first. What's going to happen is that this result, and I'm moving it again, stop doing that. This result, and I'm moving in again, so I'll stop doing it.
Deja vu.
Deja vu.
All over again.
This result will be added as the arguments on the parameter computer name. So if I hit F8 here, it's going to read the text file. Get content will open up and bring out those values. And notice it just ran get service, and it ran it twice on both those computers. And the same thing if you wanted to import it from a CSV. So here's an example of
actually, you know service. What shows it clearer? Is just give like bits. Get service bits. And
yeah,
see
you know what? As a matter of fact, what a great idea. So name bits and boop. See, I got two of them. And here's an example of working with a CSV. Now, guys, this was from our first lesson when we were talking about understanding the pipeline. We had a four-step process, and this was part of step number three and part of step four, actually. When I import
CSV, so it's sort of like 3.7.
So it's like 3.7, yeah. So when I import this CSV, and this confuses a lot of folks. So,
yes, because it has two P's. It's confusing everyone.
Well, right there, that's not even going to look like it works. So I import this. This isn't exactly what you think this is. Well, it is exactly what you think it is. I'm going to pipe it to get
member. It's one of those two.
It's one of those two, kind of, sort of, maybe. I'm going to pipe it to get member, and I want you to see that this is actually an object. This is coming across as an object. Well, this parameter has an argument called string. It wants a string. It doesn't want this object. So notice I can't just import CSV like I did with the text file. I have to extract out the column or property that I want, which if you look down here, looky, I've got computer name is the column that I want. I have to extract the values out of that and make sure that they're strings. So watch, I'm gonna do this again. And we'll do select object. And if I just did dash property and said computer name, it almost looks like it worked.
Except it doesn't.
Except it doesn't. Let me pipe it to get member again. This is still an object. I need to turn it into a string. I need to extract. No, it's expand. property. And when I pipe it to GM, you'll see that now I have a string. So, and this is how it normally would look. That's the data that I'm gonna put in there. So notice that this, it's a little bit more complicated, but when I run it, oh, and I should do dash name bits.
Yeah, bits.
Just to make it easy. When I run it, lo and behold, ta-da, it works. This is the hard part to it. And so go back and check that our first video series on working with that. But it's an important concept for those parentheses.
And that's what you had to do if you had PowerShell version 2.
And that's what you had to do if you had PowerShell version 2. But.
But. Go for it.
Well, no,
it's next, isn't it? I don't have this. I don't have it. Show them how to do it in PowerShell version 3.
How do I do it? What do you want me to show them in PowerShell version 3?
Dude. Oh, well, just dot computer name. Parentheses dot computer name.
Oh, so
up arrow.
Up arrow.
Yeah, and just no.
Which one? Do you want?
Oh, because you did F8.
Oh, because anyway. I did F8. Oh, yeah. This guy.
Yeah. So do the parentheses import CSV dot computer name, the dot operator. This is like one of the most important things.
Oh, wait a minute,
things.
Man. This is
did you have coffee this morning?
Yeah. Dot.
No, import CSV. The computer name. Oh, man.
Oh, and
yeah, the file name.
Okay, so, it's C:computer.
Okay.
CSV.
Yeah. End paren dot computer name. No, end parentheses.
End parentheses. Oh, I'm an idiot. I see what you're doing. Yes. Yeah. This is another way that you can, computer name. Yeah. So let me get rid of this.
Yes.
Because we don't need this.
Yes.
And show look at what's happening. We're going to import that CSV and then grab the computer name from it. So
I think you need a dollar sign in front of this.
I think.
You might not be able to.
Let's
find
out.
Yeah, this is how you run PowerShell, man.
That's perfect.
It worked?
Worked perfect.
I learned something.
That's the best part when the inventor is sitting here learning something that is great.
Constantly. I told you, flawed human product.
Being.
I can't remember any of this.
So, guys, this might be a little bit easier to remember than doing the select. However, I want to point out that select and that expand property, you see that a lot on the internet. So
Yes. Keep
them both in mind as you're working with it. And as a last example, I just wanted to show you that so that you had a copy of it. A lot of people ask about this. What if I wanted to grab a certain computer's from Active Directory? Well, if you have the Active Directory module, here's where I'm going to use invoke command. So I'm going to use PowerShell remoting. And inside of the parentheses, I'm going to do get AD computer. And I'm going to use the filter name like that has a C in it. So that'll get me my DC and my client computer. And I did the expand property again. And this time for the script block, because we're using PowerShell remoting, I just did get service name bits. And let's see how this guy works as we'll run him. I think the computers are up. Oh, there we go. We had to load the module, and lo and behold, it worked just fine.
We should explain that. Why did that take so long?
Oh, that's a great... Actually, a lot of you guys that saw the other show should know the answer to this. Why did that take so long? You may have even noticed it on my screen. One of the coolest features in PowerShell V3, in my opinion. Notice I didn't have to do any kind of import of an Active Directory module. I just had the command and PowerShell dynamically imported it for me. So the first time it took a few seconds, and you probably saw the screen flash, but every time I use it now, it's already there. So.
You know what I just think? We should call that virtual modules.
Virtual modules.
Right, because you got virtual memory. Virtual memory, it looks like you have the memory, and when you use it, page faults it in. This is like a virtual module. By the way, I'm making this up right now.
Yeah, I
never had this thought in my life.
So don't write this down that they're called virtual modules yet.
That's a great idea.
No,
we should have called it that.
It is a good idea.
When you use it, it's not there, and then the system brings it in and uses it. It's just like virtual memory.
And virtual modules.
Go change the documentation.
Yeah, we'll go back and change it. But the moral of that story also that's important is that when you're scripting, if you're version 3 and up, you don't have to worry about importing all these modules of all these commandlets. You just use what you need in the script when you need it, and it'll work.
Because of virtual modules.
Because Okay, Twitter right now is alive with the new definition of virtual modules.
I like that.
I like that too. I like that too. All right, folks, let's go on to a couple of other magical tools that you're going to need. First of all, my fifth example, the if statement. Yeah. If.
It's kind of iffy.
It's kind of iffy, isn't it? If this equals that. Notice we're using comparison operators that we talked about in the first version. So I'm comparing, in this case, two variables. And this is just kind of pseudocode. If this equals that, then do some stuff. In other words, if the condition is true, I want you to do some stuff. We use this all the time. So we can check for files. We can check for a path. We can check. You'll see us do it with error handling later on. Also, the if construct has some additional things to it. You can also do else. So take a look. If this and that, do some commands. However, if that's not the case, else, do these. So you got if and you've got else. If this is true, do this. If not, else do that. But we also have else if. Now, else if confuses the bejeebies.
Really?
Well, because it's if this, do these, else if this other condition, do this, else if some other condition, I start getting confused with the conditions.
Yeah, here's the way to think about it. If imagine you wanted to do this some other way, what you'd end up having to do is in the else, you have to move everything in a block, and then else, move
else,
it in, and
else.
So it just like goes out there. And so else if just says, yeah, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, we're not going to make it complicated. Now, guys, I do want to show you that, and I have an example down here for you to check out if you want to check out the if and else. You're going to see us use it a ton today, so you can run that example. But I want you to kind of notice, since I'm one of these guys that get confused by this, there is another way of doing an if statement. Now, it's okay to do multiple ifs. If this, do this. If this, then do that. If the else if starts to kind of confuse you, there's also something called a switch. And actually, if I have to do multiple ifs, I kind of am a switch kind of guy.
Yeah.
I'm a happy switch kind of guy. So take a look at this.
Calling Dr. Freud.
Hey, you know, whatever it takes. You know, 110, 220. So here's the keyword for it. It's called switch. And I'm going to switch on a variable. So I'm going to check this variable. This is and notice I've got multiple sets here that I can do. This is a little bit easier for a lot of folks mentally when they're thinking about what I'm checking. So in this case, I'm checking status, and if the status is okay, that's value 0, and value 1 would be if there's an error. So let's try this. Let me I guess it would be ridiculous for me, status equals 3, just so we can see the switch run. So I've got multiple conditions in here, but it's a little bit easier to read. And so let me run this. Do-do-do-do-do. And nothing happened. Wait a minute. Nothing happened. Why did nothing? Oh, Control-Z.
Clear that out.
Yeah, I got to clear this out.
Because you said status text and you didn't show status text. So set do dollar sign to status text at the bottom.
Ah, I am such a bad person.
You know, you should dial into the advanced PowerShell Jumpstart.
I should
They're
do
be teaching that,
that at some point. So I should actually do that.
Dollar, no, status text.
Status?
Text.
Text.
Underbar text.
Okay, great. I've screwed up my demo now.
Yeah.
So status is 3, so we should get status underscore text.
If you replay the tape from about 30 seconds ago.
I know, it's sorry guys. So I'm gonna actually display this so you can see what's gonna happen. Status 3, this is the one that's gonna get selected. And so let's see what happens here. Yep, overheated. Overheated. Now, there's two notes on this. If you're just getting started with scripting, there is an about underscore to help explain switch. And I do have to say, for people that are just getting started, sometimes switch is more confusing than the if statement. So While I've given you an example for switch, sometimes just doing a simple if as a comparison and then doing something is going to be the easiest way to go. And you're going to see us use lots and lots of examples of this.
But wait, can I show them an alternative way to do it?
Sure.
Show them the status.
Oh,
the
okay.
Switch. Sorry, yeah. Some switch. Okay, so you notice here you see $status under bar text equals this. $status, blah,
right,
blah, blah.
Right.
I hate stuff like that. Visually, I'm a person that likes things really clean and nice and pithy, because too many characters
pithy?
Confuse me.
Pithy.
So here's the way I do this, because not many people recognize this, but many of the statements in PowerShell are assignable, which is to say, now show my screen. So here, I say $status equals 3, yeah? But then, check this out. What I did is I changed it. I said $status text equals switch. So do you know that? So you can take this whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
This,
I like that. Much cleaner.
This outputs something. And what you can do is you can take the output and you can assign it to a variable. So notice how clean this is. Just has the values.
Just has the values.
And ooh, so then.
I like that a lot.
Overheated. Yeah. So then your scripts can be cleaner, my view.
No,
so, yeah.
And actually, that's
but
a really good
tip. But we can do
the
same thing with ifs. With the if statements?
Yeah.
I think, did I delete it? So, let's see, do you have something here? Anyway, so here what you could have just said is, you know, $x equals.
Oh, and then get the result out of x.
Yeah, so here, so $x equals if $false. One, else, two. Yeah, two.
Oops.
So here's the deal. Remember, I did that script right before and screwed it up. Well, it turned out we were like, what happened there?
Right.
And so if you go to my monitor, you'll see this is what had happened, right? So I tried to run this and said, can't be validated. But my earlier demo, I had added a validation requirement. Remember, I said $x, and I could say it could only be A, B, or C, so that worked. But if I did this, it didn't work. So that was going on there. So basically here, $y, execute those, and it works.
Yay,
voila.
Yay.
Okay, so that's... That's the case of the unexplained what the heck.
Yeah, actually got explained. And somebody actually in the chat rooms also remembered that it was you because you had done the validate set. So good job.
Pretty smart group out there.
Guys, I want to catch you up in the slides because we're going to do loops and then we're going to start scripting some cool stuff. So just if you take a look at mine, we've done variables, quotation marks, object members and variables, which you have all the scripts for, parentheses, so you have all of that. And we've done if statements and switches. Now... I want to do something more than once, therefore I want to loop, and I'm a loopy kind of guy. So let's do a little loopiness. First of all, some of the basic loops. Jeffrey, I'm a do loop kind of guy.
Yeah, oh, good.
I don't use it that often, but guys, take a look. We have a keyword called do, and whatever inside of the brackets we're going to do while some condition is met. Now, I want you to notice that I'm starting up here before the do loop, $i equals 1. And then I'm going to do stuff. And then as long as $i is less than 5. So this will loop through until is less than or equal to 5. Well, now here's the thing about some of these loops. You need to have a way of incrementing while you're running. Or if you don't have a way of incrementing, what will happen is the loop will run forever in this case. As a matter of fact, you can just see by a fumble.
Sure you want to do that?
Yeah, see, it's actually continuously running. I'm going to go up here, and this is a great time to show you the stop button. Because what's happening is $i is set to 1, and it's always going to be less than 5. So it just keeps doing it over and over again. This is what the incrementer is for. And let me just show you what it means. $i equals $i plus 1. In other words, I'm going to increment I by 1 every time that it loops so that eventually it falls out of condition. Now, I do want to show you the shortened version of this, right? Because nobody's going to type $i equals $i plus 1.
Lots of people do.
Well, yeah, I guess lots of people do, yeah. So the shorter version of this is $i++, and you're going to see that a lot, and that means increment by one. Now, yes, you can increment by other values as well, but watch what happens now with the loop, and let me clear the screen down here so you can see. The do loop runs. Ta-da!
Yeah, you can't do that.
What do you mean I can't do that? I just did that.
No, the ++2.
No, what was the...
You do += 2.
+= 2. Thank you. += 2. Thank
I thought you were teaching me something I didn't know.
Did you know?
You have coffee there.
I have coffee,
feel free
yes.
to sip.
Thanks. So, besides the do loop, you also have a while loop. And this is a similar setup. So, $i=5 while this condition is met. And notice, in this case, I decremented instead of incremented. So, the do and the while loops are good loops that you can use, and there's about underscore help files for all of these. However, the super cool loops that we use a lot are things like for each.
Yeah.
I mean, for each is the deal. So here's the thing. I want you to think about this. You're getting a list of something. In this case, I'm going to be getting a list of services. Every computer, you don't know exactly how many services are on there. The problem with the do and the while loop is you kind of have to know how many times you want to do this. Well, if I get service, I don't know if there's 200 services, if there's 50 services. So what I want is I want a loop that will go through each one of those services, and then when it runs out, the loop knows to stop. And that's one of the things that for each does. And so is a great example. We're going to use for each a lot today.
Hey, so, by the way, you might want to do get service B star just so you have a smaller set.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea. Name B star. Oops.
Yeah. We'll just do this for the services beginning with B.
I'll run that. And now I want to go through that and display their name. So take a look at the structure for this. For each. Now, this is the tricky part. $service in, and I like to say this in English, in the collection of services. In this case, where you're storing your collection of objects, we want just one thing at a time out of it. And this allows us to reference it. So $service, or some people like to use the word $item in whatever the collection is. Mm. And that'll give us a way to iterate through it. So $service, notice it's the one object at a time, .displayName. And I'll run the loop and you'll see, wink, there we go. Got a short little list of services.
Yeah, by the way, I find that that works fine, but I often find it a little bit confusing, $service versus services. So
yeah.
Often in these sort of things, I'll just say I use the first letter of the thing. So I'll say $S in $services.
So in other words, you shorten it to this,
yeah.
Which does makes a lot of sense to have it.
And then, you know, you see $S, services, and then it just reads a little bit
cleaner. It reads a lot better. What a great point. And we're definitely about readability as we start to script, so I really like that. That's a great tip.
When it gets more complex and you have a lot of things going on, it doesn't work as well. But for short little
local things,
it works fine.
That's awesome. We also have a for loop. And a for loop is a nice way, a lot of times used to replace a do or a while loop, and it gives us a nice structure. So for $i=0, notice different from when we were doing the do while loops, I had to set what I was here, and then I put an incrementer or a decrementer, and here's my condition. On a for loop, it's all in one place. $i=0, here's the condition, I is less than 5, and here's the incrementer. So it's easier to troubleshoot this kind of loop than a do or a while loop, and this will loop through. And Jeffrey was showing us this earlier, the range operator can be used to do some looping across the pipeline, and this is it's kind of neat. The range operator, he's already done a great demonstration of it, so you know I'm not gonna be able to do one better, but here's a great thing that I would like that for 1 through 5, I'm gonna pipe this to for each object, and what I'd like to happen is to start calculator. I know this is a stupid example. I'm just saying, but this is good. This shows you the range operator.
It actually it makes a very good point, which is to say the pipeline, you pipe objects to a thing. The thing doesn't have to do anything with the objects.
Yeah.
I mean, often that's the thing that makes most sense, but you don't have to. So here, you're just saying start calculator. It had nothing to do with the integers.
Had nothing to do with the integers, and this is a loop. So I'll run it, and I'll get... Yeah, a whole bunch of calculators out there. So why don't we kill the calcs? There they go. And so those are our loops.
Yeah.
Folks, using this information, let's go back to the slides here so that we can be all caught up. Using this information of our looping constructs, do and while, which are a little bit more complicated, but there are more refined loops for each. We're going to use a lot. You've got for loop, and you've got the range incrementer, which Jeffrey's already done a great demonstration on. We are now in position to start to really make something. Now, I want to point out that this the linguistic stuff that we've been doing is necessary, and it's something that you have to practice with and you have to play with. But now we're going to step kind of away from that, and now we're going to start making reusable tools. And we're going to be using these components inside. And everything that we've talked about this morning, whether it was as a review or you know the stuff about variables, all of that, it's you're going to see it all tie together. This is the exciting part. Where we make stuff, and he's looking at me like, well, then get on with the exciting part.
Yes, okay. I just want to point out and remind you that we have great people in the chat room that can answer any of your questions. So if you have any questions, like what did they say or what did that mean, just go to the chat room and answer them there, or ask them there, and you'll get some answers.
Or you can answer.